Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. I would encourage you to keep an open mind so that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. Once again, I'd ask you to keep an open mind. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. We're all God's children. We're all different colors, we're different genders. We have different occupations, different sexualities, and we're all in it together. So it's important for us not to judge, just relate and see where we can find common ground. And tonight I have an author and activist. Her name is Sue Gilmore. She's also a businesswoman and church worker who graduated from Bible College in the early 1980s with a degree in biblical studies. Her original intent had been to follow her schooling with a career in full-time Christian work, but she soon realized that her sexual orientation would not allow her to pursue her lifelong goals. Being true to herself and her sexual identity, she chose instead to pursue a business career in real estate. Starting at an entry-level position gave her the background and foundation she needed for success. From the beginning of her career, Sue soon found that her newly chosen path suited her God-given talents and proved to be rewarding and satisfying. Now, almost 30 years later, she is the vice president and regional manager for one of the largest title insurance companies in the nation. Sue's journey to sexual awareness and finally to peace within herself is intermixed with her life and career. God has always been the central focus of her life, even if she was not allowed by the church to serve him in a full-time capacity. Sue felt called to author The Peace Seeker as an attempt to bring awareness to the public of the misinterpretation and prejudice found within the Christian church surrounding the subject of homosexuality. Her book asks those who equate being gay as sin to reconsider their beliefs. Sue is a strong advocate of those who are Christian and gay and have been ostracized from their family of faith. And you may have been able to hear in the background my dog and my studios and my home, so I'm hoping he will settle down. But he's across the hall in his own room and usually is quite peaceable. So I'd like to welcome Sue. Sue, once again, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, the subject of sin is quite charged, and so many people look at sin as shameful. I recently heard an acronym for sin that I love, and that is swimming in negativity. What do you think about that?
I'm not sure I agree with that. I believe that there is definitely right and wrong, and I think that there are things that are detrimental to us, and that God didn't set up rules to have us be punished, but instead to keep us safe and keep us from harm.
Right. Well, I think of sin as error, in action, and that it's
yes, I
that
would agree with that for sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, why don't we start off? I think a good place to start would be to talk about misinterpretation that's found within the Christian church, and then I'd like to back up and examine your life story, your journey towards sexual awareness, and how you came to reconcile your sexuality with your faith and continue to do church work at the level that you do it now. Would you like to talk a little bit about the misinterpretation within the Christian church about the subject?
Absolutely. There are five verses in the Bible or five passages that speak of homosexuality. Now, the Bible is a big book with lots of verses and lots of chapters, and a lot of people who are not familiar with the Bible would think it's littered all through, that homosexuality is screaming off of each page with God condemning it, but there's actually only five passages that deal with it at all. And in my studies, of course, I grew up in an evangelical Bible-believing church, and they would believe that the Bible is inerrant, as do I. And what I've noticed and what I've come to believe is that there were teachings on these verses that were ingrained in prejudice and misinterpretation because of historical backgrounds that the Western modern world has taken and taught as truth to in all the theological seminaries across the country and pretty much around the world. They've taught this and just said, this is the way it is, and of course the students have believed what was taught, and then it has gone down through hundreds of years, and it's just formed into this impenetrable granite of what people believe to be true, when in actuality it's not. My favorite instance is, of course, the story that we all know about, Sodom and Gomorrah and the hailstone and all of that and the condemnation. And we are taught from a very young age that that story is about homosexuality. When even a casual reading of someone who doesn't know anything about the Bible, if they just read it, they would realize that this is a story of brutality and rape and dominance that has nothing to do with the love of a same-sex couple. So that's one example. And that is just, it's so blatant. And for me to sit in a church and hear to this day people acting like that's what that story is about is just disheartening on every level. The other passages are regarding something called pedastry, which is like an adult man taking on a younger boy as a sort of a sex toy, a boy toy, as we would call it. And they would do that, and it would be another form of dominance, and that is definitely not two same-sex adult people loving each other. And then the other passages deal with idolatry. If you read the verses before them, the verses after them, they're talking about idolatry, worshiping the ancient gods that they used to worship. And what would happen is someone that was a heterosexual would literally have sex with someone from their from their sexual, they would have sex with someone of the same sex, and that person, and that would be a form of worship to that idol. So it's pretty clear to me in Scripture that we have misinterpreted those few passages, and then it's been blown into this horrible sin.
Well, you know, that latter example makes me think about how we attach ourselves to things that we turn into idols. And, of course, there's talk in the Bible and other areas about idolatry. Mm-hmm. And the truth of the matter is that there's nothing from the outside that's going to fill our spirits up. It has to come from within. So many people will turn to other people to try to make them happy, mm-hmm. rather than to recognize that it is the presence of spirit joined that creates the happiness from within. And so it's a lesson for all of us to not attach ourselves to outer people, places, or things, conditions, if you will, try to fill up that void that only spirit can fill. What are your thoughts about that?
I totally agree. And different, obviously, different cultures can lean towards different things. Our culture is very materialistic oriented, and we all think that, you know, if we get this new car or if we get this bigger house, or that all of a sudden that's going to fill our needs, when in actuality, in my theology, it would be God would be the hole in our hearts that needs to be filled, the spiritual that you're speaking of.
Yes, I agree with that totally. Well, let's take a journey back in time and talk about young Sue and her spiritual awakening, her religious background, and also when you came to understand more about who Sue was with regards to sexual identity. Would you like to take us on a little journey?
Sure. Well, my book, The Peace Seeker, does, it is a memoir, and it does start at a very young age. It's a little funny. I think one of the first times that I realized that I might be leaning in the other direction was when I saw Cher for the first time on the Sonny and Cher show. And I was just awestruck, and, you know, that raven hair and that just killer body. And I was just looking at it and thinking, this is just maybe not what I'm supposed to be looking at. You know, I'm supposed to be looking at the man, and I wasn't. I was looking at the beautiful woman. So that was among the first times. But I would say that even younger, even at maybe 8 years old, I think I had glimpses of my orientation even then, you know, in infatuations with teachers or, you know, leaders or anything like that, even in the church. And as far as my spiritual journey, that started when I was about 6, when I accepted Jesus as my Savior. That's what we call it in the Baptist and the evangelical tradition, where you take and you decide on your own that you want Jesus in your life. And so this was a very parallel journey for me.
I can well imagine. You mentioned the title of your book, The Peace Seeker. Let's take this opportunity to tell people the best places that they can go to get that.
The easiest place is on Amazon. It is available in paperback as well as digital. You know, you can download it on your Kindle or your Nook or anything like that. That's the easiest. Hopefully soon it'll be in Barnes & Noble. But for now, Amazon is pretty much the best place to get it. I also have a website.
Right.
That you can go right through the website. You can either go through Amazon or you can go through thepeaceseeker.com, and there's a buy the book button right on there.
Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you for that.
Thank you for letting me have a shameless plug.
Oh, no problem. That's what we're all about, to help each other as fellow creatures, human beings, if you will, and I believe that service is very important, and as an author myself, I know how important it is to be able to have a platform to discuss my books, and, you know, I think that memoir is a wonderful form because it allows a reader to take a journey and see another perspective and find ways that they can relate to another human being. And of course, we're all unique reflections of spirit. And so it's important for us to find those common threads. But when did you come to feel the conflict as far as your sexual orientation in the church goes? And how did you deal with that?
Wow. That's a loaded question. I think I felt the conflict immediately. I knew better than to say anything to my parents or to anyone else about what I was thinking or feeling. I knew inherently that they would not be in any kind of agreement and probably just shut me down and tell me it was sin and tell me to get over it. Basically, I'm pretty sure that's what they would have said. But what happened was I felt a calling to go into Christian work. And just like many people, whether they're Christians or not Christians, in their sexuality, you think, oh, this is a phase. This is something that I'll get over. This is, if I find the right guy, I will, I will fall hopelessly in love, and this will all be a thing of the past, and it'll go away. And as I grew up, I dated some guys. I definitely dated some girls on the sly. You know, everything was definitely on the QT. And as I aged into my 20s, I just never felt the way I felt with my girlfriends, with my boyfriends. My boyfriends were things that you were supposed to do. As when I fell in love with a woman, it was like moon and stars and fireworks and all those things that you're supposed to have when you're in love. When it was a guy, it was just okay. Just okay. And I couldn't settle for that. I couldn't make myself marry somebody that I wasn't head over heels with. So that was when I said to myself, okay, I am in agony about what my spiritual leaders are teaching me. They're telling me that I am sinning, that I am wrong, that this can be cured, that this will go away if I only have enough faith to let it go away. And I went through counseling and praying and crying out to God to have this go away. And it just wasn't. And at the same time, the more they told me that it was wrong, I couldn't, in my spirit, muster up the what they call the conviction. I couldn't feel wrong. And I wanted to make it feel wrong so I could say, okay, this has to get out of my life. But I could never make myself feel that way. So I was in constant agony back and forth. What do I do about this? And finally, I just knew that I had to find peace. I had to. And I had to find peace with myself and my God. And what I did was I turned to the scriptures. And I said, let me look at this again. Because all I had done my whole life was just believe what they told me. Just believe, because that's what we all did. You know, we listened to the pastor. Pastor said something, we believed them. And so I read it again afresh for myself and tried, and you know, we all go into things, I understand, with our own preconceived ideas, and I tried and prayed and tried and prayed. And what I came up with was what I explained before about the misinterpretations. And with that, there was like this spiritual relief and release of joy that came to me, knowing I was at peace with God. It was just everything else that I had been taught that was bashing me to bits.
Well, as somebody who identifies with being gay, I can relate to the agony that you refer to and the crying out to God to take it from me and then wondering why that didn't happen. And, of course, mm-hmm. gay people all are on their own journey towards self-acceptance, mm-hmm. and it's a challenging journey for many of us. But I think that it's important for people to recognize that being gay is not a choice. Being gay is something as inherent as your gender,
your eye color. Yes, absolutely.
You can go on. Go on.
Anything.
It's not anything. A choice. So many people don't get it. They don't get it. And, you know, there's no sense arguing with people like that because they just aren't going to get it. But we can be proud.
Mm-hmm. I do find because the world around us, the culture around us, has been saying that over and over again, that it is not a choice. What we found is that a lot of Christians, now I always have to be very careful because in the northeast of our country, we have a lot differing thoughts and a little more liberal thoughts in general than the rest of the country, except maybe California. But I find that the Christians that I'm surrounded with are at least acknowledging that fact now. Now, this has only happened in the last few years. But they still
Well, there are
say,
more and more open and affirming churches that welcome gay people and let them know that they're perfectly okay just the way they are, and that's a wonderful thing.
It is a wonderful thing, but the reason I wrote the book is because in my circles of evangelical Christians, and I would say I would probably be able to say that also about the Catholic Church, what they've mm-hmm. said, what they're saying now is, yes, you're born gay. They might give you that, okay? But then from there, what they're saying is, but then you can't practice it because, like we practice it, but like you cannot...
Right.
You cannot act out on your feelings. So what they say now is, okay, yeah, you're gay. We get you're gay. But you have to either be celibate. So you can be celibate. You cannot have a partner. And to me, I cannot go there because I don't understand and I don't know a God. My God would not make you something and then say, okay, you have to be miserable the rest of your life and alone. I can't even go there with that. That does not make sense. That is not the God I serve.
Question. How did you come to create a God that worked for you and that totally embraced all of who you were, given your background in evangelical tradition? Was that a rethinking process for you? Was that a recreating process for you? Or just was it always aligned with your vision of God as being unconditionally loving?
It's pretty much aligned with the God of the Bible that is unconditionally loving. I mean, I don't have to go out of my theological thought processes to come to that conclusion. That conclusion comes from a God that would send a son to die and unconditionally loves me and did that for me. And if he loved me that much to do that, how could he possibly want me to be miserable? So that has no I have no problem with that.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the discomfort or the agony, if you will, because I think this is such an important journey for so many people, to see somebody that come out the other side and has found healing. What were the conflicts for you, aside from the obvious, when you decided that your sexual orientation would not jive with your lifelong goals to do full-time Christian work?
So I thought about doing full-time Christian work and being celibate, but that's just not me. I'm a passionate person. I wanted somebody in my life. So that was a conflict. In the book, it tells my journey about how I got kicked out of Bible college. It was full of shame, and because I was discovered in a lesbian relationship. I had also been kicked out of a church where I ran one of the largest ministries in the church, but I was in a lesbian relationship, so that we tried to do everything as if we were girlfriends, you know, just friends, and that didn't work. In the most recent years, I was attending a church with my partner and was pointed out by church members as, you know, what are you going to do about them? And and my church and they went to the pastors and asked us to be removed from the church because we were obviously more sinful than anyone else there. And we all know that we're all got problems, you know, but obviously was much bigger than anybody else's problem. And so then instead of being in their defense, the pastors, they looked at that and they said, geez, everybody should be able to come to church. And that's the first time in my life that I wasn't thrown out. So I was joyous at the thought that they were going to let us come to church, which at the time, it wasn't more than 3-4 years ago. At the time, we were very excited about that. But then what happened was they started to say things like, well, you can come, but you can't serve. You can come, but you can't, you know, or you can do certain things, but you can't do other things. So we became second-class citizens all over again. And it was so hurtful because we thought we were finally part of the family, but yet we weren't. We weren't.
Well,
and we...
So many gay people feel religiously abused through examples like that.
Mm-hmm.
And just thinking about the people you were talking about that went to the pastor about your so-called problem. And I was thinking about the biblical passage about don't pick the speck out of your brother's eye, pick the log out of your...
Exactly.
Or judge not lest you be judged. And where is the Christian love in an action like that when you are seeking some form of retaliation against a fellow or woman? And so what are your thoughts about that? And what kind of messages would you like to deliver to people that practice that kind of thinking and behavior and call themselves Christians?
I think it's horrifying. Christians wonder why people outside the church that either never went or that left think that Christianity is a farce and full of hypocrites, because the first things my acquaintances say when they hear these stories is, that doesn't sound very Christian. That's the first thing they say. Even non-Christians know what it's like to be a real Christian. What it's like to be a real Christian is to love, and to love like God loves, which is unconditionally. You know, so but I do want to make one point, and not to bring it back to the book, but I need to tell people that the reason I wrote the book was because I first thought I was alone, but then I realized that there were thousands of people out there that were just like me, that they were sitting in fear in their churches, afraid that they would be found out, or that they had said, you know, drop dead to the church. That's as colorful as I'll get there. They had said that and never went to church again because they knew they weren't wanted there. And the Christian church, at least the ones that I'm speaking of, are missing out on lovely people who love God and want to be there just as much as they want to be there, as the straights want to be there, but they're unwelcome. And that's why I wrote the book, to have people, number one, gay people, to understand that they're not alone and that God still loves them. And number two, to have Christians realize what they're doing, how heinous, heinously they're treating people that are brothers and sisters in God. And does that make sense? I hope so.
Yeah, absolutely, it does. And when you were talking about the thousands of people, I was thinking more like millions, because the Kinsey report that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, the Kinsey report that came out in the late 40s indicated that 10% of the population is gay. And whether or not that's right, if that's a barometer, we're talking about a lot of people that could be subject to the sort of experience that you had and that I felt in another way, although it was not as blatant in the church that I grew up in. But still, there was that double message that something was not quite right, that wouldn't it be better to just be straight? So I'd like to talk a little bit about lessons learned, and then we do have some callers on the line, and I'd like to give them an opportunity to ask you some questions. So I'm going to just give you free rein to talk about the things that you would most like to talk about, or the things that you have, the conclusions you've come to in your book that, that people might want to find out how you found your way there.
Okay. I think one subject that I was thinking about I really wanted to bring up was the similarities between this and the civil rights movement, and even slavery, which in a lot of people don't know this. Maybe if they watched 12 Years a Slave, they saw the plantation owners teaching the slaves the Bible. And that was a very common practice while they were beating them and treating them like animals. And that was because in the scriptures speak about slavery. And because the scriptures speak about slavery, because it was a common thing in the Roman Empire to have slaves or servants that you owned, that Christians thought that was okay. So that's where that came from. And then, of course, there was obviously God got a hold of some people and changed their minds and had a revolution, and slavery was abolished. But I feel often that this topic is very similar to that topic, in that because the Bible says what they think it says about homosexuality, they have used that as an excuse to hurt, just like slavery, only this is not physical, this is mental and emotional. Of course, slavery was mental and emotional and physical, but this is usually mental and emotionally damaging to people. And I think the other thing I'd like to say is that the next generation coming up, now I'm generalizing, but the next generation coming up doesn't see color as much. They don't see gay and straight. They don't get this. They don't get it. And I think, I have hope that I'll live long enough that the Christian church, the evangelical church, that these kids hopefully won't be, won't have embraced what their parents are, have been taught about homosexuality, and that there, we will see change in my lifetime. That's one of my hopes.
I hope so. I hope so, and for your sake and for the sake.
Yeah, and lastly, the thing I want to say is that, yes, there are many, many churches out there that what we call affirming, and that means that it's okay, come on in, we love you. If you're gay, we love you, come on in. But as of right now, they are most of them are not of an evangelical tradition, so they're more liberal in their thinking towards the Bible, and they're not the same culture, theological culture, as I've grown up with and as many people that I have met have grown up with and have been so hurt by. So many of us go to those churches, but we don't feel as at home because it's not our theological tradition. And and so, I mean, I've tried. I really have tried. I go, and the people are lovely and wonderful and affirming, but it's just not the same. And I'm sure people that are listening would understand what I mean by that. It's just not the same kind of culture.
What kind of church do you go to now?
Right now, I attend and go home. And
okay.
What that means, I slip in, I worship God, and I go home. And it's a independent, good drums and guitars and great worship. I listen to the sermon and I go home. So I'm not part of any kind of church as far as I mean, a lot of people do that, but in our tradition, we go and that's our family and sometimes our part of our social life, and we serve there and we teach Bible studies, and it's just a lot more involved. So the truth is, I go, but I don't attend. How's that? I go, but I'm not part.
Something's missing for you then.
Totally. Terribly missing, yes.
Yeah. I think that's an important thing to bring up for people that are in a position like yours, and so many people can relate to that. Let's try taking a couple of calls, if you're open to that.
Sure.
I'm going to go to area code 609 and bring you live on the air. You're live on the air talking with David Clark and Sue Gilmore. Who is this, please?
This is Joyce.
Hi, Joyce. Say hello to Sue.
Hello, Sue.
Do you have any questions for her?
You know, I also grew up in the same type of environment. I am not gay, but I can so understand, and my heart breaks for not only Sue, but for the church, because they are missing out on such wonderful opportunities to bring people like Sue into the fold, who have great talent, who have great love for God. I would rather have a person like Sue in my church than a lukewarm person who really has absolutely no desire to serve, but just sits there in the pew and does nothing. We need more people like that in our church. And that's just
my comment.
Well,
thank you.
I'm just curious, Joyce, what kind of church do you belong to?
I belong to an evangelical Christian church. It's a Christian Missionary Alliance church. And we would not also probably be open to having gay Christians in our church. They do talk, but whether they walk the walk, I've not seen it happen. I do not believe that they would be as open to having gay Christians as I would like them to be. That being said, I'm not gay, so
yes.
I really can't, you know, I can't even relate to it. You know, it's hard for me.
Do you see that changing in your lifetime?
I would certainly hope so. I would love to see a change. Is the church ready for it? I don't know, and maybe that's a question for Sue. Is the church ready for it, Sue?
That is a really good question. Since I left that little church that let us come but not serve, I've had many, 10 people contact me in various ways and tell me that they agree with me, that they've read my book, that they miss me desperately, that they wish I would come back, but that they know that I'm doing the right thing because I can't be as much a part of the church as I would like to be. And to have that kind of love shown to me, I wonder now, our congregation was rather young. I was one of the older ones. I'm in my 50s. But to have that kind of confirmation, I have to believe that at least 50% of the church is, I don't want to say on my side, but of my belief, and they would like to have me there. But what you're going to see, and this is something else we should probably talk about, is churches splitting over this issue, because it is the new hot topic And it is really, really divisive. And I certainly don't want to be the one that divides a church. You know, I'd rather leave and let them sort out what they have to sort out. I don't want to be the cause of that kind of turmoil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see the Presbyterian Church in my area, or several Presbyterian churches, struggling with that right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
allow gay marriage, do they not? Because 609 is New Jersey, so and we have gay marriage in the state of New Jersey, and are they going to be willing to open the church up to have gay marriages in the church? That's the biggest topic of discussion, which I find ironic, but I'm not quite sure I understand where that came from versus, you know, are we going to allow them to participate in our church? And getting married.
Well, Joyce, I'd like to thank you for calling in tonight. We have a couple of other callers, but thank you so much for dialing in and being willing to dialogue with us a little bit. And God bless you.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Take care. Actually, the next callers are my parents, who were founders of PFLAG. And Joyce talked about press. Yeah, but not nationally, but up here in Syracuse. Mm-hmm. And Joyce had talked about the Presbyterian Church. My parents happen to be Presbyterian, so let me bring them on the line. They may not be aware that they pressed one so that they could speak with you, and maybe they are. So let's see.
No.
Hi, Mom and Dad. How are you?
Hi, David.
What?
David, we're on the air.
Hi, do you have any...
Hi, Mom.
Yes.
Yeah. Hi. Good to hear your voice.
Is there anything you'd like to say to Sue?
Well, Sue, you certainly are a good advocate for gay people and their rights and the privileges that they deserve.
Thank you.
Yes, and I know our church accepts gays, though there aren't that many. You know, they prefer to go to Unity, which David belongs to.
Uh-huh.
But I know our minister certainly welcomes them. In fact, his roommate in college was gay, and he thought a lot of him.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good to hear.
Yes.
You know, it's all a start, and things have changed so much since I was a kid. I mean, there was absolutely no dialogue at all, and the word was, it was the love that dare not speak its name, very Victorian. So we have come a long way. But,
yes, we have.
Thank you, Mom, and calling in. Is there anything else you'd like to say to Sue? Any questions before I go on to the next caller?
No, I don't think so. It was a privilege to talk to Sue.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Keep up the
good work. Mom and Dad. We'll talk tomorrow. All right. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to move on to area code 404, and you are live on the air with David Clark and Sue Gilmore. Who am I speaking with, please?
Hi, David. It's Nydia. Hi, Sue.
Hi.
Hi, Nydia. How are
you? Guys. Good. It's been my pleasure to listen to you guys. I'm straight, but I love everyone, and I see everyone in the eyes of love, and all I kept hearing in my heart was, build it and they shall come, build it and they shall come. So Sue, if you feel out of place in the church, build one and they shall come.
Thank you. You are not the first person that has said that to me.
That's all I kept hearing, and I said, oh my God, I got to call in and tell them, build it and they shall come, build it and they shall come.
I did just start a gay Christian group I just started. In fact, our first meeting was last night, and you know, it's baby. It started, and I feel so strongly that there are so many gay people out there that want to have more of a spiritual fellowship with other people, and.
Yeah.
And just like David was saying, it's the spirit. It is the spirit, and that's where people are lacking. I've even said to my employees sometimes, you know, you all go to the gym, and you work on this physical being that is going to fall apart no matter how hard you try, right? Eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And what are you doing for your spiritual life? What are you doing for the inside of you that's making your eyes blink and your heart move? And, you know, what are you doing for that? And I find that across the board in our country, people have forgotten that they have a spirit. They even though that's what's making them tick and move and think. You know, how can you forget that? And they have neglected that part of their being. And so, you know, no matter what spiritual path you take, it's in there. It's in there, and it should be nourished.
Yes. All I can remember is when I had my children and looking into their eyes and just saying, oh, my God, I love you so much. I will love you no matter what. I don't care. And then being raised Catholic, I know that, you know, they mention a lot about that, about being gay and all that. But I, in my heart and in my soul, I knew that love is love. And we come from God, and we all come from God. So we all come from love. So how can we not love each other, love one another?
Mm-hmm.
That is the highest of all, love one another.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's true. And the greatest of these is love.
Yes.
And it's very hard to think that love is wrong and love is sinful. So I agree.
Yes.
Lindy, did
you
have any questions for Sue?
For Sue? No, I just wanted to, I'm glad you gave me the opportunity to just say what I need. And I just wanted to say, build it and they shall come. That's it. That's all I keep saying.
Okay, that's beautiful.
Well,
such a beautiful movie. So spiritual. Well, Nedia, God bless. And it's great
to
hear your voice. Nedia has called in on others of my shows, and she always has a lot of spirit to add. So God bless your soul, Nedia.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Well, Sue, in the time that's remaining, are there any other things that you'd like to talk about that you bring up in your book that would be helpful, that you perceive to be helpful to people in terms of becoming a little more illuminated on the issue?
Yes. One of my thoughts is that we are... It's so hard for evangelical Christians to understand this, but we are Christians who are gay. So we're just like them. We're exactly like them, but we happen to like the same sex. It's not like we're mass murderers or something. It's very hard for them to even put those two words together, because what they've been taught is that it is sin. So for them to put those two words together, they're saying two. It's like an oxymoron to them. It's opposites, and they cannot be put together. But I want to let people know that we're among them. We are there each week. We are loving the same God, forgiven by the same God, and we want to be a part. And I guess the only other thing that I would like to say is that I'm hoping that the book is a healing piece for people, that it is mind-opening to those who are straight, and it is a source of peace for those that are gay and feeling ostracized. And I believe it does that. I believe it does what I set out to do. And what I think is happening is Christians think they don't know anybody that's gay because, you know, they wouldn't come to church. They don't, you know, they're not here. But they know gay people. They know them. And the idea behind the book, and the reason I wrote it as a memoir, was to have people see a real person that was hurt. It's not just somebody out there that, you know, is gay, whatever. This is a story of someone that loves God that was hurt in so many ways by God's people. And it has got to stop. And that's why I wrote the book.
Thank you. I imagine it was rather cathartic for you, too.
Yeah, a lot of people said that. It was in some ways, but thank God a lot of it was in the past. The really horrendous parts were pretty far in the past, so it was easier to write that, you know, having had some years in between.
Well, the name of Sue Gilmore's book is The Peace Seeker, and it sounds like you'd already found a lot of that peace within you before you wrote the book, and that's a
mm-hmm.
wonderful thing. I'd like to thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
Thank you for having me. It was really fun, and I really enjoyed it.
Oh, great. Well, with that said, we can now come to a close. Let's pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.